Indeed, here I am. My guest is Dr. Stuart Hameroff. Brilliant interview. Indeed, he is a brilliant interview. How you all doing? In a moment, we're going to turn to the phones and let you ask what I hope are relevant questions of the good doctor. So stay planted right where you are. Once again, Dr. Stuart Hameroff, he's an anesthesiologist, and we've been talking about consciousness, and boy, we've been wide-ranging. So why not go here very quickly, and then we'll go to the phones. String theorists talk a lot about vibrating strings, right?
Right.
Okay, well, vibrating strings would be creating some sort of frequency, it seems to me. We could equate a vibration to a frequency. That's what all a frequency is a vibration at a certain specific frequency. So I've had all these reports, these strange reports over the last several years, and I've been getting more and more of these reports of people seeing odd objects. We call them shadow people. It doesn't matter, little things that sort of move in the peripheral vision that you see, and then occasionally even straight on. And I've had this theory that we've been in the computer age for a while now, and we all spend hours and hours staring at monitors every day. Well, monitors have a certain refresh rate, or, if you will, a certain frequency. And it seems to me that a lot of people have reported, after spending hours and hours and hours staring at a computer, of a greater frequency of seeing these, a greater occurrence, I guess I better say, of seeing these odd things. And I wonder if it is not possible that as anesthesia affects the brain in some way that we don't fully understand, when we stare at a computer monitor with a certain refresh rate, our brain begins to get trained into seeing a different frequency, and therefore we are able to occasionally catch glimpses of things at a different frequency than we would normally be able to visually observe.
Well, I'm not sure it's the frequency. What is the refresh frequency of a monitor?
Oh, I don't know. It could be 70 hertz, 60, 70. 80, it can go on up. It depends on how you have it set.
Well, that is the high gamma frequency range, so it's possible. But I think if that did that, there'd be more wide-ranging effects. I think we'd probably... But I have another idea of seeing things like that, because, you know, a lot of our conscious experience is actually constructed by our brains. We do a lot of filling in. So that, you know, change blindness studies where they show images of, you see an image and then you see a blank or black, and then you see the image again, and
yes,
then it alternates, and there's something missing, and you don't notice it. And then once you see it, it's so obvious. And you don't notice it because your brain fills in what's missing. In fact, it turns out that much of our conscious experience is actually constructed by the brain. And it's kind of a weird thing that really our consciousness is actually occurring within our heads. It's a construction, as most people would say, it's a construction within our heads, created by various inputs and so forth. But the fact is that it exists in our head. What we see as the outside world is really inside our skull, as Steve Lehar puts it.
Well, they're even doing that with television, doctor. In other words, scan lines and so forth on television, they found a way to fill in and make things have more, let's see, have our brains interpret what we see as a higher resolution than it actually is by filling in.
Huh. Well, it could be. I mean, as I said, generally we don't see as much as we think we see because we fill in what we don't see.
I hear you. All right, let's go to the phone, see what we get. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Dr. Stuart Hameroff. Hi.
Hi, this is Jeff in Grosse Pointe, Michigan, just outside of Detroit.
Hi, Jeff.
Yes, sir.
Have you ever done any experiments at all and done any surveys with people who have you put to sleep in surgery and they remember what's going on because I've had several surgeries as a child, and I'm almost 30 now. But here in at our children's hospital, what we offer our patients is, in case of a shot, if you don't want to give it a shot, they can breathe through this mask, and we have several different flavors: cherry, orange, bubble gum. I'm sure you're familiar with those.
Yeah.
But when I've had surgeries myself, dealing with personal experience, I have noticed, and a lot of people say that you can't remember this, I've noticed the room spinning, hearing ringing that sounds familiar, but you don't can't place where, and seeing the lights change colors. And I'm just wondering if you've done anything with people who've had surgery and if they can remember things. Because I can remember my very first operation when I was 3 years old, because I've had several eye operations because I'm blind, but I have light perception. And I remember a lot from that first operation. And
how old are you now?
I'm 29.
So 26 years ago, they were probably using halothane to breathe you down. You know, a lot of the sensations you have, like seeing things and kind of real vivid dreams, and maybe due to the induction drugs. Now we use a drug called propofol, which has some very interesting effects before you go to sleep entirely. And so it might be something like that. I mean, it could be something at the beginning and at the end of the anesthetic while you were asleep in the middle. But you don't remember, you know, not being conscious. So all you remember is, like, maybe going down and then coming back up, which is where the vivid stuff happens.
Well, I can remember, like, when you're breathing in, the flavor starts out, and then the flavor goes away, and it's a really weird smell.
Yeah.
What is the actual flavor that they put in the mask? What's that?
Oh, that's just, you know, food extract, whatever you want, you know, just so it smells nice, and it kind of covers the smell of the anesthetic, which isn't horrible, but it's, you know, it's a little freaky to kids, so... and a lot of them, you know, are brave, and then a lot of them, like, kind of freak out at the end. But it's a tricky business, because we don't have enough. You don't want to stick the kid. You gotta do something, and it's either a shot or breathe the mask, and that's basically the way we do kids.
There was very interesting. Remember, doctor, I told you that when I had my wisdom teeth out, it was sodium pentothal. And I recall the doctor putting the needle in and then just pressing it just a little bit, and I went, oh, my God. It was like I was in a whole different world, a whole different state. And I said, can you do that again? He said, sure. And that's when he depressed the needle, and I went, boom, I was gone.
Yeah.
But boy, that first little clearing of the needle or whatever he did, holy mackerel, I was really in some different world.
Well, a lot of drugs have opposite effects at low doses. So if you get just a little bit of a drug like propofol or pentothal, then you might have something like that. And then you get the full dose and you're gone.
Yeah, I sure was. All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Stuart Hameroff. Hi.
Yes, sir. I'm Tony calling from San Diego, California. How you gentlemen doing tonight?
Good. Hi, Tony. How you doing?
Good, good. I was wondering, doctor, do biological processes have an effect on the quantum level that creates consciousness, or is consciousness latent on the quantum level itself and simply expressed by the organism? In other words, could consciousness be the egg that somehow creates the chicken?
That was a great question. I think that consciousness, that the quantum level, if you go all the way down to the basement level of the universe, what the universe is really made of, which is some kind of quantum information in spin, whatever spin is. And string, by the way, let me digress for a moment. String theory is one way to approach it, but string theory doesn't bring along its own background. You need a background for the strings to vibrate in. And approaches like quantum spin loop gravity, Lise Mullins' approach, Roger Penrose's approach, spin networks, can describe this fundamental lever like a lace work that gives rise to everything, including, you know, energy, matter, and we think conscious experience at this level. So that's underlying in a holographic, non-local sense everywhere, and wherever you go, there it is. And then our consciousness, our brains kind of convert this into classical information. So it's that collapse, that reduction of the quantum information to classical information, like 40 times a second, that we think is consciousness.
wow, so could that be the reason that there's a dichotomy in the structure of the universe?
The
dichotomy between classical mechanics and quantum mechanics.
Well, I don't know if that's the reason or which causes which, but I think it is actually the dualism, apparent dualism between quantum and classical is like the unconscious to the conscious, or the unconscious to the classical, with consciousness the actual boundary or transition process itself. But I do like that. I refer to that as the quantum unconscious, and it could be the Jung's collective unconscious, could be some kind of Buddhist universal mind or Hindu ancient Indian concept or Native American concept. They all have some kind of a web, or the South American, the shamans have various descriptions of this, which all could map beautifully on quantum geometry.
Yeah, fantastic show tonight, guys.
Thank you.
All right. It certainly is. Thank you. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off early. Thank you very much for the call. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Hameroff. Hi.
Yes, hi. Love your work.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you were aware of scienceofthesoul.org or .com.
Say again, please.
Scienceofthesoul.org or .com.
No, I'm not.
Okay, well, the mystics there teach that consciousness is the soul, and that our awareness of that consciousness is being mistaken as consciousness, but in reality, consciousness is the soul. In fact, they claim that subhuman life is simply aware, and that human beings have the distinct privilege of being aware that they're aware. And they claim that it also puts an end to the question of abortion on the left and right side, where both sides think the soul enters the body, when in reality, a human form simply has the privilege of being aware of the spiritual energy that is in it. So how do you feel about thinking of consciousness as spiritual energy itself?
Well, I think the underlying quantum component of it is spiritual, and or can be under proper circumstances. So, yeah, I would more or less agree with that.
Okay. Let's go out of the country to Niagara Falls, Canada. And John, you're on the air with Dr. Hameroff. Hi.
How are you guys doing? Amazing show tonight.
Thank you.
I was just wondering, I was thinking about a definition of consciousness about a few weeks ago and came up with an idea that it's an interaction between the mind and the spirit, sort of, as in both might not be conscious in themselves, but their interaction would make the conscious experience. Does that resonate with you guys? Or?
Well, I think you said consciousness, awareness, and spirit, and I think those are all words. I like a physical process that can be described through science, and so a particular wave collapse is that process, which I think is consciousness. As far if you want to call that the soul or the spirit. In a sense, I think it is, particularly on the unconscious side.
I see. Okay, but, and do you think there's, in the interaction, like, is there something with the mind's ability to wrap around big ideas, as in sum up something into, like, let's say, a word? Is there something with that? Like, would it be even storing information in other worlds on a quantum scale or something like that?
Well, creativity and, like, the aha moment, I think definitely, A, you can possibly tap into Platonic information embedded in the quantum world for ideas, and if you're using quantum computation, it's a highly efficient process that's for search or for whatever else. So I think quantum processes can account for that most uniquely on the fact that you're accessing Platonic information that might be embedded at the fundamental level.
Doctor, we've had some truly brilliant people. There's no question about that in the world. But we don't seem to have more Einsteins. Where are the new Einsteins?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I maybe whoever figures out consciousness and life. You know, well, first of all, as far as Einsteins, we have Roger Penrose, who I think. Is carrying on Einstein's work. In fact, in his discussions with Hawking, Penrose takes Einstein's side against that he took against Niels Bohr and their famous debate on whether there is an absolute reality beyond quantum measurement. Bohr was very pragmatic and just took it that if you can make this measurement, you didn't really know what was really going on underneath all that. And Einstein wanted to know what was reality and how could it account for the quantum mechanisms that he observed. So he was into understanding a deeper reality as Penrose is in his quantum spin networks, quantum geometry, and so forth, whereas Hawking is more like Bohr in being somewhat pragmatic.
Doctor, I know that there's been quite a bit of work on Einstein's brain, or I think there was, and other super brilliant people that we've had. Was there ever anything in particular discovered physiologically about Einstein's brain that separates him from the rest of us?
I don't believe so. And I don't think they probably could have seen it based on what they were looking for, because I would think you'd have to look, in addition to the number of connections and so forth and the connectivity, also within the dendrites to the level inside the cell to see how complex and how connected and how functional are the microtubules, which is where we think the quantum computations are occurring. So you'd have to show some, I suspect you'd see something there, but that's my bias, of course. So but I don't know if anything useful ever came out of...
All right. Juan Cardline, you're on the air with Dr. Hameroff. Hi.
Yes. Hey, Art. Great program. PBS recently had a documentary on Einstein, and one of the pieces was on Malika, which was his, I think her name was Malika Huff, his first wife. And they showed diaries and paper documentation that her name was on the original draft of the, what was his first theory, Stuart? The special, the 1905.
Special work. Theory of relativity?
Yeah. But her name was on that, and in their diaries, it was her paper. Her name got taken off. So, you know, nothing is what it seems to be. She was a physicist in her own right, and she very much seemed to have come up with those theories with him. But what I want to bring in terms of the main discussion is, Art, you know, a book such as Creative Visualization gives you an approach, and there are many others, in terms of doing affirmations where you actually do it in such a way where you refer it to the divine source or good ordered design or quantum leap, however you refer to, you know, what some might call God, and that's a way where you don't have the unintended consequences. So I hope that you might consider getting back to that. But Stuart, I want you to, I want to put on the table very briefly, and I'll listen over the air. I want to hear how you factor in deja vu, because that's such a bizarre feeling that you've lived through something and how that factors into time. I want to hear if you've done any work around our health status and our consciousness, and also the new methods such as microwave and radio frequency, the patterns of mind control and consciousness. And I appreciate your program, and I love you, Art, and I love you now, Stuart, and I'll listen over the air.
Okay.
Well, thank you. Wow. Two questions there. You know, I might say about Malika and Einstein, I don't know about that. I do know that a woman was instrumental in the DNA structure discovery with Watson and Crick, but didn't get credit. And I unfortunately forget her name, Rosalind something. But so, yeah, that kind of thing does happen. I don't know about Einstein and Malika. I suspect. Anyway, what was the other?
No, wait a minute. You suspect what?
I don't know. I don't have any data. So let's just leave it at that.
What about deja vu, very quickly?
Well, I think it's just kind of a different, you know, this non-locality of time, because not only is space non-local, in other words, interconnected over distances and whatnot, but time is, so that, you know, moments in a linear time that we might expect or look to experience might actually be, in some sense, in some way, instantaneous in one room.
Right. Doctor, you have to hold it right there. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Yes, indeed. Erin just told me that she heard on TV that other typhoon that's out there right now has taken a northerly turn. And what can I say except go north, baby, go north. We don't want anything to do with you. Dr. Stuart Hameroff is my guest, and he'll be back in a moment. No doubt, an absolutely classic Coast to Coast AM show on this subject of consciousness, perhaps the best we've done. All right. Once again, Dr. Hameroff. Doctor, just a quick question. You can avoid this one if you want, but a number of people have fast-blasted me. I've got a little computer in front of me, changing my refresh rate, I guess. And they're asking about hallucinogens, whether hallucinogens are the path to anything at all.
Interesting question. You know, the gamma EEG synchrony, I mentioned earlier, that correlates with consciousness. The highest gamma synchrony has been reported in, on the one hand, Tibetan monks meditating, and two, people taking ayahuasca in the jungle in Brazil, where they they actually did these experiments. So it does correlate with the neural correlate of consciousness, but what that means, you know, the connection is, well, here's what I think. There were studies back in the 70s that they looked at a series of hallucinogens with different potencies, and they measured their how potent they were in a specific molecular assay that they could do, which involved transferring the electron energy from the hallucinogenic drug to the receptor, like a serotonin receptor or whatever it was. And this electron resonance energy donation was proportional to the potency of the hallucinogen, how psychedelic it was, suggesting that there's some kind of quantum electron energy transfer from the drug to the receptor and then to the whole quantum system in the brain. So I think what that does is push consciousness more into the quantum world. It's kind of like an iceberg. Consciousness in the classical world, just on top, there's this vast unconscious. And when you do things like that, you push the level down, so you become more of your, what's normally unconscious comes into consciousness. So it's like a highly driven dream state with a high degree of quantum superposition. It's more quantum than normal consciousness.
In other words, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Dr. Stuart Hameroff.
Let me just add one thing, excuse me, but yes. That's just the opposite of what anesthetic gases do. They stop the quantum processing.
Yeah, no, I've got it. Okay, go ahead, caller.
Yeah, it's Robert from Sun Valley, California. Hi, doctor, how you doing?
Good, how you doing?
Very good, thank you. I spoke to Art a while back and introduced him to the idea of quicker than the speed of light. I think you'll remember when I brought up the fact that there was an experiment done in Soviet Union with a EEG connected up to a mother of a child and separated the child and the mother for thousands of miles away. And then they introduced pain into the child, and the mother read the pain through the EEG at a distance of thousands of miles away. And not only that, they said that they actually got a reading before it actually happened. Now they're saying that this is now a theory that they're proving that the psychic phenomenon is real, and that the mother knew, and this happens with animals as well. They've done this with animals as well, where they separate the mother and then the small child. I think they used a rabbit.
Yeah, but I believe there has to be, for this quantum thing to work, there has to be an original connection, an original closeness, and then the separation doesn't matter.
Right,
is that right, doctor?
They need to be entangled originally.
Right,
and
right.
That happens in a biological system because in many ways, it can happen in two ways. Well, they can be together. That's one way. The other way is to be driven by a coherent system like a laser. In other words, if you had two particles that were never entangled together previously, were never physically together, and they were separated, but you drove both of them with a particular laser, you could entangle them that way. So you can drive the system with some coherent sorts, which we think happens in the brain and in these microtubules, for example.
Again, from the psychic angle, is that since they're not physically connected, they're separated. This runs in the family, like with my family, basically, when somebody's hurt or something else, they know it. They'll, a phone call will take place. And when I was a child, I used to scare my teachers really bad because I'd tell them things they're thinking and so on. But like I said, you mother and child situation, that the mother on a, you know, the brain oscilloscope, the EEG, will actually read.
Mm-hmm.
She's feeling the pain when the child is the one getting administering, you know, the pain. She's reading.
Yes, but between mother and child, there is that original connection that we just spoke of a moment ago, right, Doctor?
Right, right.
So you already have that entanglement is well in place.
As far as the time thing, may I say, you know, the experiments done by Dick Bierman and Dean Radin on presentiment, where they had people, they just measured an electrical change in their finger, just skin measure of emotional response, and they had them look at a series of images on a computer coming at random times. And some of them were conventional kind of scenes. Others were a very arousing, violent, sexual, or something highly emotional. And they got a greater response with those than with the benign scenes. But the interesting thing was it happened up to half a second to 2 seconds before the picture appeared. And they ruled out various types of possible leakage of information and so forth. Dick Bierman is a very careful experimentalist. So that's evidence of some kind of a backward time effect. But see, it's at the unconscious level. The subjects aren't aware of it, but their unconscious emotional level is. So if you can have backward information, quantum information, without violating causality that way. You know, you have this problem of going backwards in time and killing your grandmother, never being
born. Right.
Causal paradox. Well, a way around that is to have the unconscious quantum information do it, because it's not, it hasn't been observed yet. So
it's paradox free.
It's a little loophole in causal paradox that I think.
Okay. First time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Amaroff. Hi.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
Dr. Stewart.
Hey, how are you? Good morning.
Art Bell, you're now officially for me always in tomorrow land.
Okay.
Anyway, you've used the word awareness. I think that awareness precedes consciousness. Awareness is a thing that will bring cosmic dust together. Awareness is a thing that brings intelligence. And once the molecule, the atom, whatever, has awareness, it becomes aware of what I call CPR, or chaos, probability, and randomness. And then beyond that, you get into FRT. I know what that sounds like, but that is fact, reality, and truth. And I understand that reality is in between fact and truth. And it's fact and truth that create the reality. That's my understanding of the cosmos as I see it. And I just wondered, you know, I'm just trying to suggest that there's a possibility that consciousness is a derivative. It comes after awareness.
I think it's somewhat of a semantic term. What you're calling awareness, I would call unconscious quantum information that is in touch with a deeper level. And on the surface of that is consciousness interfacing the quantum world with the classical world.
Okay, not a lot of time. So, Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dr. Amaroff. Hi.
Good evening, Art and Dr. Amaroff.
Hi.
Top 10 show. Art, please, a quick tribute to Roger Waters of Pink Floyd, who performed here last Wednesday night. Art, it was the most profound shamanic experience I've ever had at a live gathering. Dr. Amaroff, quickly, does being conscious versus unconscious affect our DNA, and is the Big Bang a metaphor for the awakening of consciousness, or, say, the arrival of quantum energy?
Yeah.
Wow. Let me just take one of those points about the Big Bang, because Roger Penrose has done a lot of work in this area, and he also came up with this idea of a threshold for this self-collapse that gives rise to consciousness that we think happens in the brain. Well, during the Big Bang, the initial phase of inflation, where the universe expanded very rapidly, and then it reached the end of this inflation at, I think it was 10 to the minus 33 seconds, very quickly. And since that time, the universe has expanded only relatively slowly. So this inflationary period, nobody's quite sure how it why it happened and what caused it and so forth. But anyway, a physicist in Italy, Paolo Zizi, an astrophysicist at Padua, applied Penrose's theory of consciousness to the Big Bang and concluded that the end of inflation, prior to inflation, the universe was in multiple possible universes, and it reached this threshold at that moment, had the self-collapse, which was a cosmic moment of consciousness, and the particular universe was chosen from among many possible universes. And since this happens during the Big Bang, it's been called the Big Wow Theory.
All right, let's go west of the Rockies and say you're on the air with Dr. Hameroff. Hi.
Good evening, gentlemen. My name is Keith from Orange County.
Hey, Keith.
I have a question about the dreaming. When you're dreaming, are you unconscious? And when you're dreaming and you realize that you're dreaming, is that consciousness while you're dreaming?
That's a very interesting question. When you realize you're dreaming, is that a form of consciousness in the dream state?
That's called lucid dreaming. Stephen LaBerge has done the most work on that, where you gain control but still manage to stay dreaming, and it becomes quite a whole art form, actually. He's written a lot about it. But I think dreaming itself is a form of consciousness. The question is, how does it differ? And looking at its logic and so forth. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. Thank you. I've been able to do it since I was 15, and I'm so confused by it because I ask questions and I get certain answers when I realize that I'm dreaming. And that's why I was wondering, because you said, what was it that you have certain conscious knowledge while you're dreaming that you don't have while you're awake?
Yeah, I think you're more directly in touch with, you could be more directly in touch with this underlying quantum information, whatever you want to call it, at the Planck scale, the Platonic realm, we'll call it. So it's more directly in control. So maybe we do get advice and whatnot if we allow ourselves to act in a non-rash, reflexive way, but a thoughtful way, to be more influenced by these Platonic factors.
Okay. East of the Rockies, on the air with Dr. Stuart Hameroff. Hi.
Hello, Art. Hello, Doctor. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you doing?
Not too bad. I told the screener that I had a story that I wanted to share with you, just to get to your opinion on it. When I was in the third grade, about 8 years old, I went in for a tonsillectomy. While I was getting prepped for surgery, well, first they came in, they gave me anesthetic in my room, which knocked me out. The doctor had issues with a previous surgery, and I came out of that shot, so they decided to give me gas. While I'm in the operating room, they said, count to 10. So I started counting, and when I got to 3, I opened my eyes, and the next thing I know, I'm up on the ceiling, looking down at myself on the operating table and the doctor performing the surgery. When the surgery was done, I actually woke up in the hallway as they were taking me back to my room and started recounting to the nurses or to whoever was taking me back all the details of the surgery, and then proceeded to do the exact same thing to my mother when she was in the room. She was asking me how I was, and I told her that I was fine and told her details, and then I went to sleep. Then I went back to sleep, and then I woke up several hours later. Now, from what I get from you, you say that the brain slows down, and you dream at the beginning and you dream at the end. So I was just kind of wanting to know what your opinion of that story is.
I wonder if they gave you ketamine, because sometimes you give a shot of ketamine if you don't have a good IV or the IV comes out or something like that, and that causes some... that has been reported to cause out-of-body experiences. So I'm giving the description of the case without knowing more. You know, it's possible they gave you ketamine, and that's the kind of experience you had.
Okay.
All right. Is it your opinion, Doctor, that these I think I asked you really earlier in the show, but is there enough evidence, in your opinion, to justify saying, yes, indeed, these descriptions that are given are just simply utterly impossible, or is it still a big gray area?
In regards to which, Art?
Just coming back, as he did, for example, and giving a description of what exactly...
Oh, out of bodies. You know, as I said earlier, overall, there's so many things, and it's very compelling overall. I take the attitude of just looking at that rather than getting into any specifics, because I'm more interested in the theory that could account for all of these things. So, Dick Bierman is a good friend of mine, and he does a lot of the experimental stuff and keeps track of that.
He might be a good one to interview. If he's a friend of yours, perhaps you can put in a good word for us.
Okay, well, he lives in the Netherlands. Actually, it might work out. That might be his daytime, come to think of it.
As it is mine. Okay, first-time caller line. You're on the air with Dr. Hameroff. Hi.
Hi, Art and Dr.
Hello.
Stewart. How are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. This is Greg calling you from Cape Cod. And, Art, you were right. This is the best show you've ever done on consciousness.
I think so.
I think so, too. And I'm going to ask you the question where you did just before the last break, where you referred to consciousness continuing on in the form of shadow people. And I wanted to ask you both.
That is not exactly at all what I said. I'm separating what people see in different vibrational states from necessarily a soul or what once was a human carrying on. I'm not saying that.
Okay.
But go ahead.
Okay, then I'll put it to you in that hypothesis that if it continues on and they indeed show up that way, I wanted to know if either one of you had happened to see what I consider proof on that show, Ghost Hunters on the Sci-Fi Channel, that has gotten two or three really good video clips of shadow people, so they must be something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I haven't either, and I would like to see it. I would love to see some evidence of it, and I would be quite surprised. Well, although, I suppose video equipment is capable of capturing other frequencies as well. I don't know. I'll have to think about that one. Time for one more, I think. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Dr. Hameroff.
Hello, this is Chris from New Bedford.
Hey, Chris.
A few years ago, I had the pleasure of seeing the Dalai Lama speak at a conference in Amsterdam. And he studied quantum mechanics with a physicist, and he talked about that, and he said that there was no conflict at all between modern science and his Buddhist faith. And
right.
And he said,
okay, I tell you what, we're so short on time. Go ahead and comment on that, because I think it's profound. Doctor?
Yeah, he's had a lot of discussions with Anton Zeilinger, a great quantum physicist, experimentalist in Vienna now, and they've done a lot of dialogues. And as I said before, quantum physics is very compatible with a lot of the tenets of Buddhism, and they have a lot of common ground.
Okay. Doctor, it has been such a pleasure to have you on the program. You do have a website, which is quantumconsciousness.org. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right, Art. And thank you very much. I enjoyed being on.
It has been superior. We'll do it again, Doctor, if given the chance. Quantumconsciousness.org. Doctor, good night.
Good night, Art. Thanks.
Okay, folks, that's it for this night. And what a night it has been. I'll be back... given electrical power continuing here in this part of the Philippines tomorrow night, and we'll do it again. It has just been my pleasure, and I hope yours as well. Remember, you can reach me by email. I am Art Bell, ArtBell, at mindspring.com. That's probably the best place to go. It's a bigger mailbox, Art Bell, ArtBell, at mindspring.com. Day, night, whatever it is, wherever you are, have a good one. Good night.